So the last line of this verse, yastena yajito jitaha, means that person that cannot be conquered, you can conquer. So who's the person that cannot be conquered? Krishna cannot be conquered. You can try to conquer Krishna with military strength. Who tried to conquer Krishna with military strength? Jarasandhar. And he even thought he succeeded. Such a fool, Jarasandhar. So 17 times Krishna destroyed his whole army, and Krishna's army wasn't touched, and Jarasandha was tied up and then released, and his friend said, "Oh, you just had a bad day." And then the last time Krishna and Balaram just walked away and climbed up to the top of a mountain, which Jarasandha set on fire, and then they jumped from the mountain, and altogether a distance from the top of the mountain to where they landed was about 90 miles. So they landed very far away from the mountain, and Jarasandha thought they were dead. But he wasn't able to defeat Krishna, of course. Krishna later defeated him through Bhima. Who else tried to defeat Krishna militarily? Well, lots of them. Banasura, with all of his gates and fortresses. Who else? Shalva. Shalva was, he actually destroyed a lot of Dwarka, and his general temporarily injured Prajumna. And he had the spaceship, you know, he had done austerities for a year, eating only ashes, a handful of ashes a day. And still Krishna destroyed his spaceship and destroyed him. Who else tried to conquer Krishna militarily? Duryodhan. He tried to arrest Krishna after Krishna showed his universal form. Imagine. Krishna shows you his universal form and you think you can arrest him. Fool. So Krishna can't be conquered like that. Sometimes Krishna appears to be conquered temporarily. Like Kaliya wraps up Krishna in his coils. And everyone thinks Krishna's conquered. Or Bakasura swallows Krishna. Bakasura swallows Krishna. But Krishna always wins. We make our fictional characters like James Bond or Superman who always win. But actually, Krishna always wins. So what are you going to do? We need Krishna's permission in order to get free of Maya. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya mam evaye prapajante mayam etam tarantite. As Prabhupada said in his prayer coming to America, that everyone here has been put into illusion by your will and they can only be gotten out of illusion by your will. That doesn't mean Krishna whimsically says, "Oh, I think I'm going to put this soul into illusion." It's by our desire. But we can't put ourselves into illusion. We're not powerful enough. Like if you go to an amusement park and you take a roller coaster ride. So if you want to take the ride, you have to want to take the ride. They don't kidnap people from the street. You have to pay your money. But then in order to get on the ride, they have to open the gate to the ride. And they have to lock you into the seat. You've also, everybody seen these rides? Okay. And then to get out, they also have to let you out at the end of the ride. They have to, otherwise you could unlock it in the top of the roller coaster. And so they have to lock you in, they have to unlock you. So Krishna has to lock us in and Krishna has to unlock us. Although we're here by our desire, and Prabhupada says in the first canto, the unhappy materialist can get out by their desire also. Simply by desiring to do so. So you cannot get free of Krishna's control, which is what we're all here trying to do, by force. So how can you, yasyena yajito jitaha, how can you conquer? You've got to conquer Krishna. You've got to get Krishna on your side. You've got to get Krishna to agree, okay, I will let you out. Otherwise, you don't get out. Does that make sense to everybody? You can't get out just by having a tantrum. I want to get out! Or by force, trying to escape from the prison. You know, carefully sawing the bars in the window so it looks like it's still there. And then at night, pushing it out and escaping. The jailer has to come with the key to let you out. Actually, when Gopakumar was going through the coverings of the universe, when he found, finally came to Prakriti, Maya Devi herself, she said, I am the sister of Vishnu, and you have to please me to get liberation. So Krishna can tell his little sister, please let them out. So how are we going to do that? How are we going to conquer the unconquerable? That's what's given in this verse. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. One so seriously considers one's wife to be his own that he sometimes kills himself for her or kills others, including even his parents or his spiritual master or teacher. Therefore, if one can give up his attachment to such a wife, he conquers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's never conquered by anyone. Purport. Every husband is too much attached to his wife. Therefore, to give up one's connection with his wife is extremely difficult. But if one can somehow or other give it up for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the Lord himself, although not able to be conquered by anyone, comes very much under the control of the devotee. And if the Lord is pleased with the devotee, what is there that is unobtainable? So if Krishna is pleased with us, anything. You have the most powerful, most caring person pleased with you. What can you not get? Why should one not give up his affection for his wife and children and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Where is the loss of anything material? Householder life means attachment for one's wife, whereas sannyas means detachment from one's wife and attachment to Krishna. So we're going to read also the last two lines of the previous verse and the last paragraph of the previous purport, and then again today's verse and purport. So last two lines of text 11. Apyekam atmano dharam, dhara means wife, nirnam svatva graho yata, which is the translation that goes with that. Even one's wife at home, with whom one is most intimately attached, should be offered for the reception of guests and people in general. And that part of the purport. The idea of giving even one's wife to the service of the public is that one's intimate relationship with his wife, or one's excessive attachment for his wife, by which one thinks his wife to be his better half, or to be identical with himself, must gradually be given up. When should it be given up? How? What was the word? Gradually. Prabhupada said, everyone must purify their heart by a gradual process, not abruptly. As formerly suggested, the idea of ownership, even of one's family, must be abandoned. What should be abandoned? The idea of ownership. The dream of material life is the cause of bondage in the cycle of birth and death, and therefore one should give up this dream. What should one give up? The dream. Consequently, in the human form of life, one's attachment for his wife should be given up as suggested herein. Now, this verse today says why it should be given up. So yesterday's verse said how it should be given up. What do you do? What does it look like if you give up that material attachment? And today's verse is why, if you give it up, you'll conquer Krishna. And why not? If you don't give it up, you may do something crazy. Jayad yadarte swan pranam, han yadva pitaram gurum, tasyam svatvam shriyam jayad, yastena yajito jita. So the negative side. One so seriously considers one's wife to be his own that he sometimes kills himself for her or kills others, including even his parents or his spiritual master or teacher. So I think half of all murders are in the family. Pretty much all over the world, half of all murders are family members. Therefore, if one can give up his attachment to such a wife, he conquers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never conquered by anyone. So we talk a lot in the Hare Krishna movement, or we used to, I don't know if we still do, but we talk a lot in the Hare Krishna movement about how a woman should be submissive to her husband and faithful and chaste and follow the vows of her husband, etc. We very rarely talk about attachment, detachment of the wife to the husband, nor do we talk much about the attachment and the care of the husband for the wife. There was one devotee in Radhadesh a year or so ago who brought that to my attention in terms of the husband to the wife. He said, we always talk about how the wife should respect the husband and treat the husband, but how should the husband treat the wife? Is there anything about it in the Shastra? So here we see what is the normal condition. The normal condition is that a husband should see his wife like himself. This is the previous verse. Svatvagraham. Atmanadharam. He sees my wife is just like myself. As other places in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada says that the wife should always be kept on the chest of the husband. In other words, she should always be protected. He said, just like the man protects his own wealth personally, he should protect his own wife personally. And of course, we see the example given by Lord Ramachandra, who took so much care to protect his wife that he even had a war, although, as Prabhupada says, he could have manifested millions of other sitas from his own body. He took so much trouble to take care of his wife. For what to speak of Krishna? So Krishna took so much trouble for each wife. He expanded himself in each palace. And each woman was thinking, oh, Krishna never spends any time with the other 16,107 queens. He's only with me. And he really tried to please them. Oh, you want a parijata flower? Oh, I'll give you a whole tree. I'll take you on a ride through the universe on Garuda. And there's such affectionate dealings between the Lord and his queens. And we also see, of course, the sweet dealings between Arjuna and Subhadra. How much love Arjuna had for Subhadra. Or the Pandavas for Draupadi. Such sweet and affectionate dealings. It says, Priyavrata and Bahirshmati, their love grew every day. Same with Usha and Aniruddha. It said their love grew by four times and four times every day. So that's the normal condition. That's being civilized. And detachment has to be something above that, not something below that. Detachment is not the mode of ignorance. So in our modern society, when we hear detachment or give up affection for your wife, we often interpret that as being the mode of ignorance. So what does the mode of ignorance mean? The mode of ignorance means, well, on the lowest level, I don't even get married at all. And by the way, this mentality is seeping into our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. More and more and more, I'm finding people, oh, you know, is this your wife? No, she's my girlfriend. How long has she been your girlfriend? Oh, 5 years? 10 years? You know? And I remember one devotee came to me. She said, oh, I'm really not sure if I should marry this devotee. You know, I'm really strict with my sadhana, and his sadhana is really poor, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to tolerate it. And I said, well, you really got to think about what you're willing to live with. She said, yeah, and also, you know, his mother drives me crazy every time she comes into the kitchen. I said, what? Huh? She said, yeah, we've been living together for about a year. So this is becoming more and more and more and more common. You know, this idea that I can have an emotional or even a physical relationship, subtle sex, gross sex, both, with a member of the opposite sex without any responsibility. So that's the mode of ignorance. That's vikarma. Vikarma is stealing. I can take something from somebody without taking any responsibility for them. So we shouldn't be too surprised that we in the Hare Krishna movement tend to do this, because we're surrounded by this in the outside society. It's all the propaganda for this sort of mentality is all around us. And we're a preaching movement. We're constantly bringing in new people who bring this mentality with them. And we're constantly interacting with the outside society that has this kind of mentality. So it's not that we should be, you know, condemning or harsh of people who take on this mentality of vikarma, but we should recognize it for what it is. That's not even piety. It's not even varnashram, which isn't even in the yoga ladder. It's not even civilized life. Let me take from you, let me take something from you without taking care of you. And there's much more of a tendency for men to do that than for women to do that. The reason being that women, because they get pregnant and have babies, they're much, much more inclined to push for a relationship of commitment than a man is. But of course, nowadays that women use contraceptives and take abortions, have abortions, they may also get into this mentality that let me just take something from a man and not give him any service in return. And even if people get married, they can still have this mentality. You know, this idea of ownership and the mode of ignorance is, my wife is just here to serve me, I'm not here to serve her. Or my husband is just here to serve me, I'm not here to serve him. I'm just here to take, I'm not here to give. Let my husband provide a home and let him support me in whatever I want to do. I hear this a lot, even from devotees. You know, my husband should just support me in doing all the service that I want and cook for him. Why should I do that? Why should I clean the house? That's all Maya. You know? Oh yeah, my wife should cook for me and clean for me and iron the clothes, and I'm just going to be at the temple doing service all day. Why should I do anything to take care of her? That's all attachment. So that's the mode of ignorance. That's just stealing. Let me take from the other without anything in return. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita, third chapter? That the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. If you don't even start with sacrifice, you're not even human. I mean, the animals sacrifice because they're forced to by instinct. They don't have a choice. The animal mother can't say, well, I think I'm going to neglect my kids and go to the clubs. You know, they just can't. The male kangaroo can't say, well, I've decided I'm not going to take care of the little babies. It's just there by nature. But human beings, we have a choice. Are we going to engage in yajna or not? So civilized, how many times does Prabhupada say civilized human life starts with varnashram? Varnashram means sacrifice. If your wife's really the better half of your body, don't you take care of your own body? Could you imagine saying, I'm only going to take care of the left side of my body and not the right side of my body? It'd be madness. So that, my dear friends, is just the mode of passion. Mode of ignorance, I harm my own body, I harm other people, I don't care about anything, I just take, I don't give anything in return, I don't have any affection for anybody. Mode of passion is I take care of things, but I take care of things due to my material attachment. I figured out, well, if I really want to enjoy the world, I've got to do it piously. I've got to do it according to the instructions of God. I've got to pay for things. I've got to do sacrifice. And the vast majority of advice about household life in the world today is based on the mode of passion, which is much better than the mode of ignorance. We don't want to be in the mode of ignorance. Coming to bhakti in the mode of ignorance is really a bad idea. It's possible. Kapila Dev says you can do bhakti in the mode of ignorance. But that means you're going to be fighting with the devotees. It's like trying to light a fire with wet wood. Prabhupada said you're just going to get smoke. Okay? So mode of passion, that's you have a mood that I'm supposed to be giving. That there's a give and take relationship here. That if we really want to be happy, we have to sacrifice, and we have to sacrifice according to the instructions of the Shastra, not just make up my own way of how to sacrifice. So the man is, what does Prabhupada say? The man is supposed to give the wife nice jewelry, nice clothing, give her some children. I've met so many men who say, oh, I don't want to have any children. Give her a nice place to stay. Prabhupada said household or life means home, wife, children. Why do you think it's something else? Otherwise, again, it becomes mode of ignorance. Well, I'm going to have the wife, yeah, but I'm just going to live like a sannyasi. And to take care of her psychologically. What does the wife want to know? Oh, you're the most beautiful woman in the world. Of course, she looks in the mirror and she says, does he really believe that? Could that possibly be true? But it's still, you know. Even though she knows that there's a lot more beautiful women walking around. That's what she needs to hear. You're beautiful. I love you. I love being with you. and the woman also to sacrifice for the husband. What does the man need? You're my hero. You're my provider. You're clever. You're right. Prabhupada said the husband always has to think he's right. You know. Oh dear, did you ever think that it might be this way? Yes, I did. And she doesn't have to say, well, it was my idea first. Prabhupada says the man always has to feel that he's in a superior position, that he's needed. Krishna likes to play a hero too, you know. It's a natural male psychology. So if you don't even do that, you're not even in the mode of passion. If you do that, then you can go to the higher planets. You can take birth in a good family. You can at least have, what does Prabhupada say, household life is for making the mind peaceful. But that's not enough, as it says in text 11. Not just ownership. Not that this is my husband, this is my wife. Even in the mode of passion, you're supposed to say, yes, my wife must serve the guests and the public. She's not just for me. She doesn't just belong to me. I don't just have a sense of ownership. I'm supposed to engage her in something beyond serving me. So we hear propaganda in the Hare Krishna movement, and we hear it a lot, and we hear it often, that the only thing a woman should ever do is her ashram duties for her husband. And that's all. That women have no varna. All they have is ashram. Interesting, huh? So Krishna says, Chaturvanna mayashristam gunakarma bivagasam. Tasyam kartam apimam vidyakartam apimam. Gunakarma. So people who say that women only have ashram duties, they're saying that women have no guna and karma. Anybody know a woman who has no personality? Everybody here knows some woman, right? At least your mother. Does she have no personality? Are all women exactly the same? So according to this philosophy, a woman is just sort of a blob. And whoever she marries, she just becomes like them. And she never needs to have any personal expression other than cooking and cleaning and childcare. That would mean that every woman is only suited to be a domestic worker. Nothing wrong with domestic workers, and some people are very happy being a domestic worker, but is it that every woman in the world is only suited and qualified for being a domestic worker? So Bhagavatam is saying, no, you can't just have your wife as a domestic worker. You have to engage her in something beyond that. That's text 11. It's necessary. And of course, before the Industrial Revolution, everybody understood that. The women were also engaged in helping their husbands. Prabhupada says, you see the weaver. The wife is spinning, the husband is weaving. You see the potter. The husband, wife, they're both making the pots. The children are helping. Draupadi, she was helping run the kingdom. She told Satyabhama, she said, I'm the only one who knows how much money's coming in and how much money's going out. And I run the whole royal city of 100,000 people. She was the mayor of a city, 100,000 people. It's a lot of people to be managing. She wasn't just a domestic worker. Could you imagine? Do people really think the duties of a queen and the duties of a washerman's wife are the same? Or do you really think that Draupadi could marry a weaver and be happy? So in order for the husband to engage the wife properly in duties outside of just serving him, which he must do, Bhagavatam saying he must do, otherwise he'll think in the mode of ignorance, this woman is just my slave to serve my senses. So in order for that to happen, best if marriage is between equals. So we have so much evidence that women have varna. Otherwise there's no meaning to pratilom and anulom. Ramaharshan Sutta, he was the son of a Brahmana mother and a Kshatriya father. When his Brahmana mother married his Kshatriya father, she didn't become a Kshatriya. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been called a Sutta. He'd just be called a Kshatriya by birth. She remained a Brahmani even after she married a Kshatriya. When Ajamil left his Brahmin wife and married a Shudrani, she didn't become a Brahmani. She remained a Shudrani. Also, there was great care taken So that men and women married of equal mentality, Prabhupada said, marrying men and women of unequal mentality is one of the causes of divorce. And especially the Shastra warns against a higher class woman marrying a lower class man. We still have an idea, even in modern society, that this is not good. Isn't that a fact? If there's some marriage of people who aren't equal, if the woman's higher, we have some idea, oh, it's not good. Why? Because then the man's going to stifle his wife. She's not going to be able to express her nature. And as we talked about yesterday, Krishna says you have to express your nature. You don't have a choice about it. And then the woman won't have any opportunity to express her nature properly and serve her husband nicely. She won't be able to combine her varna and ashram very nicely if she's higher than the husband. It'll be difficult. Whereas if the husband and wife have the same kind of inclinations, then there's harmony between the woman's varna duties and the woman's ashram duties. So this is just even talking about materially. If you want to be peaceful, if you want to go to heaven, then what about in the mode of goodness? So when you come to the mode of goodness, it's not that you become like someone in the mode of ignorance. When you're in the mode of goodness, you're doing the same things but for a different motive. The only difference between passion and goodness is not the external behaviors. If you really read carefully Bhagavad Gita chapter 14, 17, 18, it's the mentality. The mentality in the mode of passion is I'm doing this for sense gratification. I want to have a nice family life, so I'll be happy in this world and I'll be happy in the next world. And most religious systems in the world today are teaching this. Family values. Have a heaven on earth and have a heaven in, you know, the world beyond. And some of them even teach that after this life you'll be with your family eternally. Which I always wonder, suppose you don't like your family. Do I have to be with them eternally? Like, you know, those of them who talk about your body just comes out of the grave and that's your eternal body. It's like, suppose I don't like it. Do I have to have this big nose for all of eternity, you know? But that's their basic mentality. You're going to enjoy. Now, they're right. You're going to enjoy a lot more in the mode of passion than you will in the mode of ignorance. Krishna says in the mode of ignorance, there's no enjoyment at all. I mean, there's something. I'm bad kind of thing. In the mode of passion, at least, there's a little enjoyment of mental concoction and a little enjoyment in the beginning, although it ends up being quite disappointing. But mode of goodness, you're doing the same thing. You're affectionate to your husband. You're affectionate to your wife. You engage your wife in activities according to her nature, not just everything for me. But your purpose now is purification. I'm doing this to become purified. I'm doing this to realize the self. I'm doing this to become free from the material nature. I'm not doing this for my own sense gratification in the present or in the future. That's called karma yoga. So mode of ignorance is vikarma. Mode of passion is karma. Mode of goodness is karma yoga. Karma palatyag. I give up the fruits. I tell my husband he's a hero, not so he'll tell me I'm beautiful, but just because out of duty, that's what I'm supposed to do. If he tells me I'm beautiful, he tells me I'm ugly, I'm still going to tell him he's a hero. And I'm going to tell my wife she's beautiful, not so that she'll tell me I'm a hero, but because it's my duty. And I do it for my own purification. I give up the sense of ownership. I give up the sense of ownership. Not that now I make my wife wear rags. Or I tell her, you know, really, you're just a piece of poop. I don't have any interest in you. You're just a poop bag. We used to preach like that, you know. I mean, I remember when there was a big fire juggy going on in one temple, and my son, who was about, how old was he? I was a little kid. 2, 3 maybe. So he wandered in the temple room, and the sannyasi doing, the erstwhile sannyasi, former sannyasi, doing the yajna, said, get that stool bag out of here. And I didn't say anything, but I thought, well, what are you? You know, so that's not the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness isn't that you go to your kids and your wife or your husband and say, you know, you're just a stool bag. I mean, there are verses like that in the Bhagavatam. That's what Rukmini says. She says, any woman who considers her husband just some bag of skin decorated with hair to be dear to her is a fool. That doesn't mean the wife goes to her husband and says, you're just a bag of skin decorated with hair. And Lakshmi Devi also, she says, any woman who accepts any man other than Lord Narayan as her husband, she's a fool. So this detachment is not just there for the man. Lord Kapiladeva says, any woman who thinks that her husband is the source of her wealth and her children and her jewelry, that she'll be destroyed like the hunter is calling for the deer. So both husband and wife should give up their sense of ownership. That's a mode of goodness. I'm serving my husband out of duty. I'm serving my wife out of duty. That's hard in the beginning, poison in the beginning, but it becomes like nectar. But here we're talking about above the mode of goodness, bhakti. In bhakti, suranam sarvadehinam, you're supposed to be friends of all living entities. Don't hate anyone. What does it say in the Ishopanishad? Doesn't hate anyone or anything. So what does this mean? Giving up affection. Giving up affection, does that mean I replace affection with hatred? Hatred is the other side of attachment. We take birth again with people we hate as much as with people that we love. You know that, right? Like Amba, who hated Bhishma. What a fool. She had the association of a Mahajan, Bhishma. She had the association of Krishna. And she wasted all of her time hating Bhishma and doing austerities to kill Bhishma. Today's verse is talking about the opposite of attachment, aversion. Excessive attachment can become excessive aversion, that you can even kill people out of your attachment. It's that that's recommended to be given up, not to be embraced. When we're saying become detached, we're not saying become full of hatred. The Bhagavatam is saying, if you're too attached, you can turn to hatred. So don't go there. Don't go to attachment. Don't go to aversion. Like Maharaj Chitraketu, when his son died, he said, maybe he was my enemy in a previous life, and he's taken birth in my family just to give me pain. You know, you hate somebody, you're going to take birth with them again and again too. I know one devotee couple, the astrologer told them, in your last life, you died killing each other on the battlefield. And that was very evident in this life also. So that's not fun. Now, I also know at least two devotee ladies who remember. One remembers being a Bengali sannyasi. One remembers being a Catholic priest. And they hated women. I asked the one lady who remembers being a Gaudiya Vaishnav Bengali sannyasi. I said, so why did you take birth as a Western woman? She said, I was so angry at all these Western women coming into Bengal and ruining the culture. She actually remembers. So aversion doesn't get you anywhere either. And we've even seen in this life, we've seen renunciates sit up here on the Vyasasan and read these verses, those of us who've been around a long time, and say, hate women. And they talk like that for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, and then all of a sudden we look at them and they got a woman. Haven't we seen this? So that's not what Bhagavatam's saying. Krishna says to become free of all attachment and aversion. Any kind of strong attachment, doesn't matter, positive or negative, be free from the dualities of desire and hate, ichidvesha, not hating either. Being free from affection doesn't mean becoming hateful of hatred. I mean, if there's anything we should hate, it's our own desire to own and control this material world, not any other living entity. We're not even supposed to hate demons, What to speak of our family members, especially if they're devotees. I don't know anything in the Shastra that says, hate another Vaishnava if she happens to be your husband or wife. Then it's okay to hate a Vaishnava. Then it's okay to, is there anything like that in the Shastra? It's okay to speak harshly to a Vaishnava if they happen to be your family member. We're not supposed to hate anybody. We're not even supposed to hate demons. We're not even supposed to hate our enemies. So what does this mean, detachment? Like the mode of goodness, but instead of just for my own purification and liberation, to please Krishna. Yas tena yajita jita. To make Krishna pleased. Bhaktivinoda Thakur put it so nicely. He said, I now see my wife, my children, as your servants, and I take care of them to please you. Just like the head of the brahmachari ashram, he shouldn't be thinking, I own these brahmacharis, they're here to serve me. They're here for my pleasure. You should think, I'm here to serve them. To please Radha Gokula Nanda and Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman and Gaur Nitai and Srila Prabhupada. I'm taking care of them. The Raja Rishi, he sees the whole country as his family. Correct? He's like a big father. He sees all of the citizens like his children. Does that mean he hates them? He takes care of them as his service. Prabhupada talks about one way to get a son is to initiate someone. The guru is supposed to see the disciples like their children. Does that mean they hate them? They don't have any care for them? There's supposed to be a great bond of love between the guru and disciple, it says in the seventh canto. Prabhupada says, if there's no love, how will you give yourself to the control of another person? But first you have to love Krishna. So that same son who that former sannyasi called a stool bag. So when he was sitting on my lap and we were with Srila Prabhupada in 76 and Prabhupada looked at me and he said, just like this mother's loving her son without any expectation of return. So in this way you should love Krishna. And Prabhupada, and my father asked Srila Prabhupada, will loving her son help her to love Krishna? Prabhupada said, no. But loving Krishna will help her to love her son. So if I actually am trying to please Krishna, then I can actually love my husband and actually love my wife, but not with material affection and not with ownership. Only then is there real love. Mode of ignorance, that's no love. There's love in the mode of ignorance. Nor is there any detachment. There's just cruelty and exploitation. In the mode of passion, at least you're paying. At least you're not stealing. But that's not love either. When I go to a shop and pay for something, I don't love the shopkeeper. In fact, I'm happy if they put something on sale and I get to cheat the shopkeeper. I'm happy if the shopkeeper loses money on a deal, isn't it? I don't complain if something's on sale. Oh, my dear shopkeeper, you're losing money. You sure I should buy this at the sale price? I'll pay you the full price for it, even though it's on sale. Who says that? So in the mode of passion, you're paying, but you try to pay as little as possible. And the mode of goodness, you're starting to have some idea of actual love. Starting. But in bhakti, you can have real love for everyone. And you're not thinking, this is my wife to own, to use. You're thinking, this jiva is given to me temporarily to take care of in service. I don't own her. When Krishna asked me to take care of her, I will take care of her first class. Like Prabhupada told Jaipataka Maharaj, whatever service you're doing it, you do with great care and attention. Doesn't matter what it is. So it doesn't matter what service it is. If you're polishing the deity's brass or you're distributing books, well, you're taking care of this jiva who happens to be, for this lifetime, this few years, as your wife. You do it first class, so Krishna will look and say, well done, good and faithful servant. Not, this is my wife to serve me, to own. This is my wife to take care of. Now, this is my husband who's going to take care of me and be my shelter and be my protector, give me everything I need. This is my husband simply to take care of for Krishna, as my service to Krishna. So Krishna will say, well done, good and faithful servant. And when you work like that, then you don't go emotionally up and down depending on how your spouse treats you or your children treat you, because your satisfaction is coming from Krishna. And you can be steady in your service regardless of the external circumstances. You're on the platform of freedom. And when the time comes, as it should come for all of us, to externally give that up, then we do that also. As Prabhupada says here, gradually we come to this idea, oh yeah, you belong to Krishna. I belong to Krishna. I'm doing this for Krishna. And the time will come when you say, okay, now we're not in the Grihastha ashram anymore. We're in the Vanaprastha ashram. Now we work together more as partners for purification. I no longer expect you to serve me, my senses, even in devotional service. So this is our bhakti process. And we should show a way of dealing with each other that's far better than people in the mode of passion, not worse. We shouldn't be examples in the mode of ignorance in the name of bhakti. Mode of ignorance is described here. You know, you're even willing to kill people for the sake of your attachment, or kill yourself. So this is how we should treat others, but without wanting our own sense gratification. Not this is mine, that I can break it if I want to. Like we have a quota. You know, I have this bag is my quota and this cloth is my quota. It's not my quota to destroy. It's my quota to take care of for Krishna. And it's Krishna's. He's given it. He will take it away. It's not mine to enjoy. It's not mine to destroy. It's mine to use to please Krishna. And the ultimate issue, you know, these families we have, they're not our real families. Our real families are in Goloka Vrindavan. We have our eternal mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and cousins and village. And I'm sure we're all related there in some way, but not in the way we're related here. Just like Maharaj Chitraketu's son when he was brought back to life. And Narada said, see, your mother and father. And he said, oh, in which life were they my mother and father? No, don't get attached to enjoying the family relationships in this world for sense gratification. They're very temporary. They don't really relate to our eternal position. They're not something that I own. But even as Prahlad Maharaj said, this human body, although it's temporary like others, one can use it for self-realization. So that should be the goal in all of our endeavors, whatever ashram we're in, whatever people we're dealing with. So thank you very much.